Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Everybody, my name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is Kate Raphael. Kate Raphael is with Women in Black Movement. The Women in Black Movement was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize by some people from Denmark and Norway. Kate Raphael, you could tell me more about Women in Black.
Well, Women in Black is an international women's peace movement, which does vigils in opposition to militarism, racism, and extreme nationalism all over the world, from Yugoslavia to Australia, including here in San Francisco and Berkeley.
How long have you been involved, and what got you involved?
A close friend of mine helped to start Women in Black in Berkeley after the beginning of the First Intifada in Palestine, and they would stand in Berkeley for an hour every Friday in solidarity with the Palestinian people's struggle for independence and freedom. So I knew about Women in Black, and I was a supporter of Women in Black, but I didn't really participate actively until a few years ago. During the NATO bombing of Yugoslavia, we decided to have Women in Black. We wanted to have a women's demonstration in opposition to the NATO bombings. And because Women in Black had been very active in Yugoslavia and was one of the few organizations really actively opposing both the Milosevic government and its ethnic cleansing and the NATO bombings, and was making a very strong statement that this was not the solution and was working for a multi-ethnic cooperative relationship with the people of Kosovo, we felt that it was really appropriate to do Women in Black, to make our protest a Women in Black vigil. And we had, at that time, about 500 women came to surround Union Square for an hour. And it was very powerful.
That's in downtown San Francisco, the center of downtown San Francisco.
We kept that up for a few months during the bombing and immediately after, but then we stopped doing it pretty much after the NATO action was more or less over. And then we decided to start again last year when the Intifada broke out and the repression of the Palestinians was becoming so intense. We decided that we should really start doing a regular vigil in San Francisco again. And so we've been doing them monthly. We do our protests on the first Friday of every month in downtown San Francisco. One of the things about Women in Black is that every group is autonomous. We're a loose international network, but there's no rules and there's no requirements for membership. It's not like we're card-carrying members of Women in Black. Any woman who wears black and stands in a public place in opposition to militarism and racism is Women in Black. And so some of the vigils are silent and some are use guerrilla theater and some have speakers and, you know, some stand in a line and some stand in a circle. There's not a rule about how you do it. And I think that it's really important that women in other communities realize that, you know, a lot of the vigils are very small. Sometimes in San Francisco we have 20 people and sometimes we have 200. But, you know, regularly, on a regular basis, I think we have 20 to 30, sometimes 40 women who participate really regularly. In Berkeley, a lot of times they've only had two women doing this every Friday. So no matter how small you are, no matter how big you are, you can do Women in Black. We met recently with a woman from Colombia, and they are doing Women in Black demonstrations there on Fridays. Also, I think they also do the first Friday of every month to call attention to what's going on in their own country, the war that's going on there, and they're taking a position for peace as opposed to aligning with any particular side of the conflict, which is, I think, much needed and very different from what a lot of other groups are doing there.
Mm-hmm. Generally, it's nonviolent or always nonviolent. Is that any kind of rule, do you think?
I don't know that it's stated, but it definitely, given that we're a peace movement, I think that there's very strong feeling about nonviolence, that we're not there to create more violence. Mm-hmm. Certainly the Israeli women have attracted a lot of violence towards them. They have at times been subjected to a lot of harassment and even threats and violence. But definitely we're a nonviolent movement. We stand for women working together and women reaching out across the issues and the ethnicities and races that might divide us. So we tend to be for solutions that bring people together rather than solutions that keep people apart. And I think that's why our group in San Francisco, in contrast maybe to some of the groups which are focused on the Israel-Palestine issue, as we have been also, we feel that the best solution to what's going on there would be a single democratic secular state rather than necessarily two states, although certainly it's not really for us to say as people who don't live there, you know, what the people there should do. What we really, you know, our bottom line is that Israel must withdraw completely from the occupied territories, including the settlements, and must give full democratic rights to everyone who lives within its borders. And aside from that, it's certainly up to the Palestinians where and how they choose to live and be governed. You know, but what we feel would be optimal would be for everyone who's living in that land to find a way to live together as one entity. Mm-hmm.
So do you know how many groups there are altogether and how they've been treated? Before I get into how you folks have been targeted here in the Bay Area by the FBI, I'd like to continue on getting a kind of a more overview, if you know, and maybe you don't, since it is a pretty leaderless, grassroots kind of whoever comes, as you said, Kate Raphael, about Women in Black.
Well, you asked how many vigils there are. I think there's more springing up all the time. I mean, just in this area, in the last few weeks, we've heard from women in Sacramento, Santa Rosa, Sebastopol, Chico, and San Diego who have started or are getting ready to start their own vigils. So it's hard to give an exact number, but I do know that on June 8th, when there was an international day called by Israeli Women in Black in solidarity with the Palestinian uprising, there were, I think, over 130 vigils around the world. So that seems like a pretty good number that we know that there's at least 130.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's a lot. And sometimes you have conferences, I think. I interviewed somebody a few years ago about an international conference that happened in Europe, I think.
There have been conferences. I know I just actually got something by email about the 10th annual International Women in Black Conference, which was held in Novi Sad, Yugoslavia. I didn't go, and actually no one from this area was able to go, so I don't know too much about those.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Kate Raphael, who's from Women in Black here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Having this overview now, let's kind of zero in on what happened to you and the FBI recently, when that happened.
Well, I got a call from an agent from the FBI on September 24th. Pretty much out of the blue. I'm not sure exactly why, where she got my name or why she chose to call me at that time. I had just spoken at a rally that was organized by Jewish Voice for Peace. on that day and been introduced as being from Women in Black. So my suspicion is that that's where she got my name, but I really don't know. And she just said on my machine, she left a voicemail, which is, you know, I was very taken aback by, because among other things, we don't think of the FBI leaving voicemails. You think the FBI shows up at your house or your job or something. So, you know, but this was a message on my answering machine. Please, you know, hi, I'm from the FBI. I have a few questions for you. Please give me a call at your earliest convenience. So when I hung up the phone, which I was getting home from work, and I get home about 1 a.m. So I was, you know, sort of shaken. I was like, here it is in the middle of the night. I wonder what I should do. And what I decided to do was call, leave a message for a friend who works with the National Lawyers Guild, asking if she would return the call for me and find out which of my political work the woman was interested in, because I'm involved in a number of things. And when she did that, we were all very surprised to hear. The lawyer who called is also a member of Women in Black, as it happens, and we were certainly really shocked that she said that she wanted to talk to me because of my involvement with Women in Black. She did say, and I think that this is a misperception that has been put out, that Women in Black is being targeted or Women in Black is being investigated. As far as we know, that's not the case. The agent did state clearly that Women in Black is not a target of their investigation. In other words, they don't suspect Women in Black of having had anything to do with September 11th or with any other, you know, they don't suspect us of terrorism. But she did say that she wanted to talk to me about who I know in the Middle East. My attorney said, well, she didn't know if I wanted to talk to her, but she would get back to me and let me know what she wanted, and we'd get back to her. Almost immediately after that conversation, the agent left me another message, called my house again and left another message, and this one was much more hostile, saying that I could come in with my attorney, but that if I didn't come in and talk to her really soon, she would probably have me subpoenaed, which means subpoenaed to the grand jury in New York. At that point, I asked my attorney, can you get this woman to leave me alone? Because as it turns out, you know, they're, once they've been contacted by an attorney and told that you're represented, they're not supposed to call you directly. They're supposed to talk to your attorney. But it seems to me that because she knew probably that the grand jury wasn't likely to issue a subpoena to me, given that it's pretty inconceivable that I'd actually know anything about September 11th or any other terrorist activities. I mean, you know, we're a women's peace group in San Francisco, mostly Jewish lesbians. It's really quite unlikely that we would have any direct contact with Islamic fundamentalist men or any other group of people who might be responsible for flying planes into buildings or other kinds of terrorist activity. And I think they probably know that. So it seemed to me that she wanted to make sure that she got to deliver her intimidation threat directly rather than relying on my attorney to do it for her. When she talked to my attorney again, my attorney asked her if we could have a list of the questions that she wanted to ask me. And at that point, she said no, that she was going to report me non-cooperative to the people in New York and see if they wanted to issue a subpoena. It's been about a month since exactly a month since all of this happened, and I haven't heard anything further. So we figure that they're on to bigger and badder things, like the threatened torture and use of truth serum on people that they're holding who have refused to give them the information that they're looking for. There are 700 people of Arab descent and from Muslim communities who are being held in federal prisons because they haven't given the government the information that they want, or because there's minor problems with their citizenship or their residency. And, you know, so there's a huge amount of repression going on in this country. And I think that we have to look at the contact with made to Women in Black in that context, that it seems unclear what their goal was in contacting us. It seems obvious to us that we would have no information, no valid relevant information to give them if they're actually investigating terrorism. And it's pretty hard to believe that they are so uneducated as to who we are and what we are that they don't know that, although it's certainly possible because they're not well-educated and they're not well-informed and they're not really interested in being well-educated. A lot of people have said, well, you know, shouldn't you talk to them and educate them? And I think it's really important to debunk that idea that the FBI is in any way interested in education or in any way educated in justice, interested in justice. You know, anyone who wants information about Women in Black can get it very easily. We're an open book. We're an open public organization. We want people to come to us. We want people to call us. So anyone who calls the voicemail, you know, and leaves us a message, we'll get a call back pretty soon. One of us will probably give them our home number or tell them anything they want to know about Women in Black. So this is certainly about not wanting to talk to anyone about Women in Black. But the agent never said she wanted to talk to me about Women in Black. She said she wanted to talk to me about who I know. I don't know anyone who's involved in flying planes into buildings or any other illegal activity. I also don't know anyone whose name I'm willing to share with the FBI, not here, not in the Middle East, not anywhere. And I think we can't lose sight of the fact that the FBI are still the organization which destroyed the Black Panther Party. They're still the agency which murdered dozens of members of the American Indian Movement. They're still the orchestrator of the McCarthy Red Scare. So although people may feel that there's a legitimate criminal investigation to be carried out here, I don't feel that the FBI is capable of doing anything legitimately because they have forfeited their legitimacy by these illegitimate acts that they've taken over the years. And I don't think that it's a good idea for anyone who's an activist to be willing to speak with them at all.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense. And I think there's a lot of people, particularly if they're not activists, and even if they are activists and they're young, who don't understand, aren't themselves knowledgeable about the role of the FBI in repression, in as long as I've been an activist and before that, for sure. And so I'm glad you mentioned those things. And for that reason, it is very confusing to a lot of people. I've just been talking to a friend of mine in New York who's not an activist, but who's a great person, who's very shell-shocked and works in a school right near the World Trade Center. She was asking me about the people here as opposed to talking about the people in New York, and we're on the other coast, far away from where that happened, and people are so anxious to feel safer. Well, I could go on and on about the whole issue of feeling safer, what that means. It's such a bind because it's the obvious place to look for help in a way, even to find the perpetrators, even those of us who are totally opposed to bombing innocent people. But I think it's okay to find perpetrators of a horrible crime, which is probably most people who are activists or who are peace activists too. So it's a very just a kind of a hard to explain to people, or kind of a bind about where to look for help.
Certainly, you know, we all want justice for the people who were killed, and we all want to feel safer. We want to feel that there's not going to be people sending us anthrax in the mail or you know, sending planes to fly into our houses or the buildings where we work. And I certainly would like that. I would love to feel safer. I mean, I do feel scared, as I think everybody who lives here has to feel pretty scared right now. And certainly, you know, the postal workers who have contracted inhalation anthrax and who have died, you know, didn't do anything to deserve this. They're not part of any global conspiracy, or, you know, they're not making the decisions that cast so much poverty and despair and war around the globe. But I think we have to recognize that we're not safe. That, in fact, you know, for many years, this is not new. One of the things I think that's not being talked about is that all of the new restrictions, all of the new, you know, anti-terrorism laws and policies were all already on the agenda before September 11th, Bush and Ashcroft had this goal of more repression, more restriction, more people locked up, long before anyone flew any planes into any buildings. And so I think we have to ask the question, you know, exactly what are we willing to give up in order to be marginally safer? Because it's become very clear, I think, in the last weeks that there's no real way for us to be safe. I mean, what really can we do? You know, is everybody who puts a letter in a mailbox going to become a suspect? And, you know, if so, then we had all better be ready to have the FBI knocking on all of our doors day and night, 24/7, because that's the only way that we are ever going to be able to really be safe, and we still won't be safe. I mean, the fact is that people who want to do terrible things are going to find a way to do it, and people are really angry at U.S. policies around the world. I do not think that the people who carried out the activities of September, the attacks on September 11th, were interested in justice either. They have that in common with the FBI. They had a political goal, same as Bush and Ashcroft have a political goal, and their two goals are very much in conflict. But I think it's a mistake to try to justify or suggest that what happens was somehow payback, you know, legitimate payback for U.S. policies. But I do think that if people want to be safer, we have to look at our policies. We have to look at how U.S. policies around the globe have really fostered a sense of that we don't care about anyone but ourselves, that we're only interested in getting wealthier and in stealing the world's resources, you know, and that we are a warlike people. I mean, basically, we have shown ourselves to be the most militaristic society, you know, to be a country that glorifies violence. If you look at our movies and television shows, which are exported all over the place, you know, a movie like Independence Day makes it pretty clear that we're not exactly a peace-loving people. And we certainly have not shown ourselves to be a justice-loving people. And I think that if we're ever going to feel safe, and if we're ever going to feel that we've achieved justice for the people who died, it's going to be because we've changed how we live so that we're living more in the cause of justice and of peace around the world, that we're taking a more constructive role in shaping our world and trying to make our world a better place to live rather than a place where we're in some kind of little fortress that feels safe as long as we don't venture out of it.
Mm-hmm. And the whole issue of feeling safe anyway, I mean, life is not safe. It all leads to death sooner or later. And it's just the media has such a big role in whipping up fear, too. I also want to make sure that people understand that when the FBI comes to activist organization and they ask you who you know, I mean, it doesn't mean, like as you said, it doesn't mean you know anybody. It's in the people who have been arrested who are not saying who are not saying who they know. It doesn't mean that they don't, that they know that they're involved in some way. It's important to take stands, and I think, and certainly Women in Black and you, Kate Raffaella, as part of Women in Black, are taking a stand, and something to do, and people want something to do is to take a stand for changing these kinds of dynamics, as you just talked about.
And I mean, I think that, you know, it's easy to be for freedom and democracy when we do feel safe. And what we do now when we feel threatened is what's really going to say to the world who we are. And I feel like we really have to say that certain things, certain values that we're supposed to hold most dear, like freedom and justice and democracy, you know, like the right to remain silent, that these are values that we can still hold even when we don't feel so safe. I also want to make sure that people know what to do if you do get a call like this, or if anyone approaches you on the street, or, you know, agents come to your house. You do not have to talk to them. Tell them that you want to talk to your lawyer, and if you don't have a lawyer, call the National Lawyers Guild. Here in the Bay Area, you can call 415-285-1055. And you don't have to know an individual lawyer, just tell them that you're being contacted by the FBI. That number is answered 24 hours, and someone will connect you with a lawyer who can help you negotiate the process. It's really important. If you want more information about Women in Black in San Francisco, please call us at 510-434-1304 or send an email to womeninblacksf@netscape.net.
Okay, Raphael, I'm going to ask you to repeat those in a minute or a few seconds for anybody who didn't get them. And also, you can. The National Lawyers Guild has just been consistently incredible around issues of civil rights and many issues. And you can probably ask information for the number in Washington, too, if you didn't catch that number, if you're not in the Bay Area. And also, you have a web page, there is a Women in Black web page, which I just got information out of, which is womeninblack.net. And there you can find out about the incredible work that Women in Black do. So give those numbers again, if you would, Kay Raphael.
All right. Well, you can reach San Francisco Women in Black at 510-434-1304 and email womeninblacksf@netscape.net. In the Bay Area, you can reach the National Lawyers Guild at 415-285-1055. You can also look at their webpage, www.nlg.org.
Okay, thanks very much, Kate Raphael. Women Active and Women in Black Movement, which is for peace. Thank you very much for listening. My name's Sue Supriano.